Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Hey guys, you just missed the greatest intro of all time. It didn't work out. And so now we're not even going to relive it, but it was crazy. People started applause breaking. There were people here for some reason, and then they left. And now, you know, it's not quite as hyped up as it was, but podcast is still going to be good. I got Mike Knox here. Is that right? Mike Knox?
That's right.
It would be weird if that was the first K that you pronounced in the history of the KN.
It would.
Yeah, would have been bizarre. Well, thank you for being here, Mike. I appreciate it. Tell me a little bit about yourself from the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm from Pasadena, California.
You're born and raised?
Born and raised.
Wow. Yeah, very rare that we get real people of Southern California.
It is. Most people move out here from some other place, or you kind of see them wandering around Hollywood sometimes.
You get a lot of the worst people from other places.
Kind of like Vegas without the gambling, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because a lot of people, I know, not a lot, but a handful of people moved to Vegas in the last couple of years. And I always go, why'd you move to Vegas? Thinking they're going to have, you know, well, I was offered an opportunity. But it's always just like a, well, you know, LA is just getting terrible, so.
Right. I just got up and ran.
I didn't want to go too far, but just, and I'm like, but Vegas is just the worst part of Los Angeles, essentially.
It's too tempting for me. I'd lose all my money on the first day of gambling.
Yeah.
I can't go.
Do you gamble?
But I know that if I would, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't get it. It's fun for a very limited amount of time in Vegas.
Yeah, so
that's how I look at it.
You lose all your money. Yeah.
You lose some money. All it took was one good week or weekend where I lost more money than I wanted to, and I'm like, I will never appreciate this terrible place ever again.
Agreed.
Yeah. Pasadena's nice, though.
Yes.
It's pretty nice up there.
Yeah, it's nice.
Did you go to public high school up there?
I did. I went to San Marino High.
San Marino. That's even nicer.
That's very nice. There's like butterflies.
They have the garden. And
yeah, I can't afford to live there, but yeah, it's nice. Very nice.
Fair enough. What'd your parents do?
My dad was an insurance broker for all the schools there, but he lived at the racetrack. So he was he had a couple race horses. He had one that was a second longest long shot in Hollywood history.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool. It's a good claim.
Yeah, he was at the track a long time and brought me there all the time. And
nice. So you grew up. Get to see not a darker side, but a different side.
Oh, yeah. It's people coming with a lunchbox full of coins. Yeah. It's horrible. Yeah.
A lunchbox full of coins might be the most disturbing description I've ever seen. What I know about you is that you were a prison guard.
Yes.
Where were you a prison guard at?
At Lancaster Prison. So it's the only prison in LA County.
Lancaster.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had a prison, but to me, Lancaster feels like a prison.
Yeah. I mean, just going there is pretty much feeling like a prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a great place for a prison. Yeah.
And then, so there used to be a guy here who hung out, not every night, but a lot of nights, and he was just full of shit. He was just the type of dude who claimed he was everywhere there was. Anything famous that ever happened. So you'd be like, oh man, I wish I could have been at Woodstock to see Jimi Hendrix. And he'd be like, interesting story. And then you'd listen to it and you'd be like, this dude is full of shit. He fucked Janis Joplin at a Three Dog Night concert. He witnessed Jimi Hendrix play the Star Spangled Banner for the first time and light his guitar on fire. He ran kicks back for the Raiders in the late 60s. Just one of those things where you're just like, wow.
It's all the stuff you can't fact check.
Yeah, nothing that you can prove. Right. Where you're like, oh, but you're only on preseason.
Like Three Dog Night. That sounds believable.
Yeah. Listen, if you told me you fucked someone at a Three Dog Night concert, I'd be like, that's pretty random.
Yeah.
If it's Janis Joplin, I'm like, now this seems a little shady. If I said, how on earth did you fuck Janis Joplin? What led to that? Well, you know, I was doing the spotlight for Three Dog Night at the time, and, you know, there's a couple songs where I faded the spotlight in so well, she came up to the booth and just, you know, started asking questions. Next thing you know, we're fucking. I'm like, okay, It's a believable story. But he moved to Lancaster, so I don't have to see him anymore. It's far enough away.
Very far away.
How far? It's what, 2 hours drive?
From here, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just
in traffic.
Traffic, yeah. It's a nightmare.
3 to 4 years in traffic.
Yes.
So how do you become a prison guard? What leads to that?
So I was doing an internship in college, mm-hmm. and I was doing it at the probation. And the probation, the guy in charge was like, you got a degree. Don't worry about it. We're going to prison. Put you in a tower. You're going to be great. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to be a parole agent. You had to work in a prison to do it.
Really?
Well, that's what they told me. Though.
Okay.
You didn't have to. That's what
they told me. That's the setup?
Right.
And, that's how they hook you?
Of course. I couldn't fact check anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, you send your packet in, you wait in the mail or whatever, and then you go off to their little academy or whatever. And so I get there, and I'm like, you know, hey, you know, where's the tower? You know, my recruiter said I'm going to be in the tower. And this, like, crusty old guy is like, you're going to be on the ground for 20 years.
Right. And you're like, fuck.
Yes.
I've been lied to.
Yes. And so that was kind of... I think the good thing about working in a prison is you really realize how much you are lied to in life. I'm like,
yeah.
You're lied across the board of everything, and you just kind of got to accept that and go like, yeah, it's another lie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been had again.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a terrible experience. 5 years. How do you make it 5 years?
Because it kept having, this is the thing about any kind of state job, is it kept having like layoffs, and it'd be like, they'd dangle it over you. Like, you can get out of here and you can go somewhere else, but then they'd have hiring freezes and that's why I was stuck there.
Right.
And then the money is so good. You kind of get hooked on the money and you're kind of looking around. You know, I had other friends that were attorneys and stuff, and I was making more money than them. And it's kind of like, yes, this place sucks. I hate every minute of it. It just drains everything out of you. And that was about 5 years is where I couldn't take it anymore. I was going to go work in insurance. And
you're like, the money is good.
I was also, I wrote a book about it. And that was my intention, was to write a book, because every class I had in college, nobody had worked in a prison. So they didn't know what it was. They were just, a lot of them were just professors. I had one guy that was probation, but he didn't know anything about a prison. And so prison always did fascinate me. And I think that's what it is. It fascinates everybody.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of, they don't really let the media in, and then the media kind of creates what they want to create. And
yeah, they're gonna pitch the propaganda they want on it.
And, yeah, and it's just, I mean, it really is. It's 99% boredom with that 1% of just pure terror, you know?
Right.
But you get so used to it that you're like, you're falling asleep in the middle of the day room floor with 200.
While the terror.
With 200 inmates around you, because you're so relaxed, it's so normal, and you get so.
It's your job,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's no matter what, it becomes the norm.
It does. It becomes very norm, and then it also, like, you know, everybody says tell a story, and you kind of forget because it just becomes, you know, just so normalized. But I remember a celebrity came in there because they were filming the movie SWAT, and
He
came into the housing unit, and. You know, he's like, hey, do you want autographs? Yeah, no. And it was just because everybody's such in a horrible, horrible place, and they don't really care to know the outside world. And it was very bizarre and I felt bad for the celebrity.
Yeah.
But that was the reality. It's like everybody's stuck in prison, and they know it sucks, and they're making the best of it, and they don't really care about I mean, they really didn't care about the outside world, which is kind of odd.
Yeah. And what's the level of incarceration at the Lancaster jail?
It's a maximum security. And that was another thing. When I started, it was a minimum level. And then the day that I graduated from the academy, it became a level four is what they call it.
Lucky
then,
son of a bitch. Yeah, you fell right into the good stuff.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. Okay. So do they have death row?
They don't have death row. So death row's in...
That's San Quentin?
I think they got rid of actually death row. I think they commuted everybody, but it used to be at San Quentin. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What's a daily, you get to work, you work normal hours or do you do overnight shifts?
No, you do overnight shifts, but you know, you're working 6 to 2 or you're working 2 to 10. You know, no family understands unless there are, there's people that are related and stuff like that. I had nobody so nobody understood it. And so at the time my wife, you know, your wife thinks you're out partying and you're like, I just worked a double shift. You get held over. You can't leave. They don't allow you to leave. And then there's no phones in there, so you can't really call home.
Right.
And so it becomes very hard on people with anybody with a family, extremely hard, because not only that, they're also, everybody's taken off for holidays, especially anything that has to do with sports. Everybody just calls in sick. And so you're forced to do all this overtime and...
Brutal.
You know, you can't get out of that place. And that was another reason that I hated it. There are people that like it. There's people, I still know people that are still there, and I don't get it, but they're there.
Do you think that they like the power of it? Is that?
I think so, but I also think it's easy. It's you're just housing and feeding people. You're not the whole thing about having to rehabilitate. You know, like
no one's trying to do that.
No, they spent like a couple million dollars putting that on everybody's uniform. Nobody's being rehabilitated.
Yeah.
No. And that was another thing that I never liked about it either was, yeah, I get it. You committed a crime, but they lump everybody together. You're putting the murders in there with somebody that, basically larceny,
theft,
walked off
yeah,
of somebody.
Stole cars.
And you're throwing everybody in together and, in an 8x10 cell. And, could we have some drapes here maybe, make it nice? Nope.
No.
And then you've got this policy that you're supposed to enforce and... It's like, really, the guy's got his towel up on the door, and that they focus on that, and they tell you, you've got to go get this guy and make sure that he doesn't have his towel up, and so it just gets ridiculous. And
yeah, I mean, I've never spoken to a prison guard, but I've spoken to plenty of people in prison, and who got out of jail or whatever, and they all say the same thing. It's always basically just like, I learned more about being a criminal in jail than I did out of jail.
Well, because you would think hey, let's talk about our feelings once we're in here. Let's get some education going. Let's have a group or something like that. Nope, you're not required to do anything. And it always, kind of blew my mind that, most people, their parents are waking them up with a hug or something like that. Their families abandon them. Hey, how'd your dad wake you up? He put cigarettes off of my head, out of my head, or threw coffee in my face or whatever.
Yeah.
I kind of read their files, and it's very, very dysfunctional families, a lot of abandonment. That's what it comes down to, is that these are people, yes, they committed crimes, but they really are people that did not have love. And from an early age, you talk to these guys, and they were abandoned by their family living on the street. Nine years old,
right?
And dropped out of school, like just stuff that you think would be crazy. Dropped out in the third grade, never went back, or just nobody, no support system, so,
right?
Yeah,
I mean, our system in America is set up to create problems, and a lot of like people are like, well, how does this keep happening? You're like, what do you mean? How does it keep happening? Right. We're a fucking obsessive culture that literally leaves kids.
Yeah, no,
defend for themselves.
They're always talking about what they care about. Nobody cares about kids. I mean, that's the reality, and it is very sad. And I think that prison, prison touches everybody. You look at, you're always hearing about the incarceration rate, but for those guys, it's kind of like somebody going to college hey, where'd you, you're talking on the yard about where you went, where you served time, and it's cool that you got out of Pelican Bay, or that, the low level joints, you only did county time.
Right.
So they all kind of know each other, and it's a whole network. And so you really do need to go in there and kind of change everybody's mind by educating them. And that's not being done. It's with anything. I don't think it's ever going to be done, with kind of all the different classifications that we have or things that are wrong with our society. We just keep hearing the same thing over and over again,
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to fix anything, especially at this point, but that's terrible. All right. And so then you leave there. Just couldn't do it anymore. What was the final straw that made you go?
It just became there. For me, it was... just kind of it's like a half hour walking from the parking lot to the housing unit. You're housing and feeding these guys. It's hot. It's the desert. Your family doesn't understand nobody understands what you do. And like my mom was bringing gift baskets to prisons being told by her church that they didn't have running water. And so nobody understands what you're doing. So you can't talk to anybody. You'll see people you'll see somebody at a birthday party or something, and just, you can tell they have no idea what goes on in prison. They don't, I still get, I've been out of there probably 18 years, and I still get, how's the prison gone? Because nobody's listening to you.
Right.
That's the reality, is nobody really cares.
No, they don't. And it's one of those situations too, where it's like, that sounds like an incredibly fascinating job, but like you said, most days it's probably just boring as fuck. And so you're just like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, and I always, I would go and, one of the things I did is I would collect all the prison weapons, I was trying to get an art show, but none of these art places, none of the museums stuff cared about it, I thought it was fascinating.
So these are like makeshift weapons?
Yeah, because these guys are very smart.
Yeah, the shivs.
It's just what they use their intelligence for, but that's the thing, That stuff fascinated me. It didn't fascinate other people, but you would regularly go around and strip everything out of their cells, and within a day or two, they'd have all this other property. It was kind of this mass consumption. That interested me. I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, that is interesting.
So you would confiscate their contraband because it'd usually be shivs or shanks, or tattoo guns were really cool.
Right.
And I took them to different curators. They could care less. They didn't want any of it. But I would take that to colleges and speak. And so that helped, like, visuals at colleges and stuff like that. But the colleges aren't teaching.
Yeah, they don't care about
that. No, they don't care. No.
There's no money in that for them. So
yeah,
that's what college is about here. What are some of the more interesting weapons? Like, what are they using to make weapons? What were the ones that you were like, wow, that's
the number one thing for
the
me,
engineering is impressive.
You would give them, the engineering was always impressive. Like the tattoo, I'll go back to the shank. The shank you could make. We give them. They get a state issue cup. Well, they'd melt that down and make a shank out of that. And,
wow.
You know, that's a perfect thing. It's made out of plastic. It's hard plastic.
Yeah.
So anything was. You take metal out of something, you know, take the wood off of here, whatever it was. The tattoo gun was the motor from a Walkman, a Bic pen, and a guitar string. So the motor is rapidly hitting that on your skin, and then they're making the ink out of ash. So they would burn something in a paper bag and then scrape it and mix it with toothpaste, and that would be the ink.
Wow.
So stuff like that was always...
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing.
And they're, you know, they're making Pruno. They're making all the time. You're finding that all the time. So they're...
That's the toilet wine or whatever it is?
Yeah.
The fruit wine?
Yeah.
Wow, so how often are you seeing actual stabbings? Like, how often does someone get stabbed in a prison?
I mean, they're every day, so you have 4 yards. So that stuff's going on all the time.
All the time.
All the time. It's just that whether or not you see it or not, or, you know, it kind of comes to the point of, it wasn't really a fight, you know, because stuff does get serious. I did see one guy that was murdered by his cellmate because it is all, you know, it's all run by gangs and
right.
It's all about making money. And
I had a friend who went to jail, and he's Italian. But he was in, I don't even know, somewhere in the valley. I think it was like a county thing, but he ended up just kind of having to hang with the Mexicans. They basically kind of adopted him into the group because he didn't want to be a part of the white supremacists.
Right. And it's very, no one wants to hear it, but it is segregated, and they segregate themselves, and the administration always tries to come in and unsegregate them, and it doesn't ever work.
Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, why don't we have more violence?
Yes.
Great plan.
And so I don't know the answer to solve the solution for that one, but.
I mean, you put criminals in small spaces, they're not going to behave.
Yeah, it's like I would always say, you know, you know, people. I think the number one question people would always ask is, are they having sex with each other?
Right.
Yeah, all the time, wouldn't you? I mean, if you're sitting in a cement box and your cellmate after 10 years is like, hey, I'll blow you for a Snickers bar, doesn't sound like it's a bad idea, you know?
Yeah,
because you're in prison. So
yeah,
and that's just what people they don't want. Nobody wants to talk. Nobody does talk about it. So
yeah, I mean. I guess I understand why they're not talking about it, but I think everyone just assumes that it's happening. Like, in my mind, that's what goes on. There's just, like, some alphas that just fuck the other dudes.
Yeah, because you have, especially, like, in AdSeg or the whole, where you don't have a TV or a radio. I mean, that's kind of my thing where I always say Epstein did do it. That's because you would see people, you put them in a cement box, and you would watch them go crazy. Because there's nothing for you to do. And I think I think your brain is designed for, it's time to go, buddy.
Yeah.
We're not getting out of this.
You're like, this is all, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. So if you took somebody, and you would see it especially with
someone who's lived on their own island and penthouses.
You very rarely had somebody that had extreme wealth that went through, especially to prison, because a lawyer usually got them.
You can get them out. Yeah.
So
the way the system's set up is.
It was normally people that were so used to prison. That was a thing I never knew anything about gangs, never knew anything about prison, jail, anything like that. But all those guys did. And so they're very comfortable with it. And I think that's psychologically what it is that when you've been to juvenile hall, you know, you've been to juvie, you've been to CYA, whatever it is, as a kid growing up, it normalizes it. And then going and visiting inside of there, I was always afraid, scared to death. It's still, you're crazy if you're not scared to be in a prison.
Yeah.
But it does normalize.
The thought of it just terrifies.
With kids, you know, kids are coming in every single day to visit their family. You know?
Right.
So it is very normalized.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
It's not something I ever hope to experience.
Yeah, no, I don't.
But,
I don't either.
It's one of those things where you're just like, wow, that is terrible.
And that is a deterrent for me. Like, I'm like, now that I know what it's like, I know that I will never go there. If somebody comes up and wants to start a fight with me, they can just punch me in the face because I'm not punching you back. I'm not going. Our system, especially our legal system, is so screwed.
It's so funny.
I know that public pretender is not going to help me out in court. So,
well, there's a lot of. In podcasts in general, there's a lot of similar discussions that go on, especially with comedians, because comedians most of the time are talking to other comedians on podcasts. But I honestly think this might be the first podcast where someone said Epstein probably killed himself. It's just that mentality. I'm like, that's hysterical, because the amount of times I've heard people be like, oh, the Clintons did it or whatever.
Oh,
like,
I always get, I've stopped, I used to buy into it, but I would always get, you're a Fed. And I'm just thinking, what would a Fed be doing on Instagram? And I don't care about you.
Yeah,
you
know? They don't give a shit. So you got out of it. What did you do then? What do you do when you leave prison?
So I went to parole.
You did get into parole then.
I went into parole.
The dream finally came to fruition.
Which I realized wasn't a dream, but yeah. I just think, you know what, it's with everything. It's,
yeah.
You kind of get to that point where you know.
Eventually a job's a job.
You know, I did comedy, you know, many years ago, and then my daughter got sick. She has epilepsy, and so it kind of, I had to give up that dream. And
right.
So at least I had a job.
Yeah.
I had health insurance, and that was, for a long time, that was the most important thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. As a type 1 diabetic, I didn't have health insurance through most of my 20s. I just worked like shit jobs because I was doing comedy and all that stuff. And then I started getting really sick. And I, right around that time that I started getting really sick, I started booking commercials. And I grew this big, stupid mustache. And I did it for fun, but then I'd go to these auditions and then people were like, you look hilariously stupid, you're in the commercial. And so I'm like, I'd go in to play like a waiter on a commercial and they would be like, you're not right for this, but come back in an hour because we're doing a roofer scene and you've got a great look for that. I'd be like, what? And I'd show up and they'd just be like, this is good, you're gonna get this. And I'd be like, wow, okay. So then I got health insurance. And then I went into diabetic shock, like within 3 months of getting health insurance. And I was in Providence Hospital in Burbank for like 6-7 days.
Wow.
And when I got out and they sent me my bill for what I owed, I was just like, this is catastrophic. I owed like $8,000 or something. But then I'm like reading the bill and I'm like, wait, they just charged... It was like $125,000 or something for all the stuff. I'm like, I guess I'm glad I had health insurance.
Oh, yeah. It's such a racket. And
the whole system's set up. Everyone's getting their piece. And
when you're not, when something doesn't happen to you, because I was always kind of a healthy person. Then when my daughter got sick and started having seizures, I didn't even know where the hospital was. And I never really knew how to navigate any of this. And it is just as dysfunctional as the prison system is.
Yep.
It was.
I'm constantly blown away by it now. Like, my kids as of now don't have any major issues, but I obviously have health stuff I have to deal with. My wife has some stuff she has to deal with. I don't understand any system where healthcare is a for-profit system, and not just on like the hospital's purpose is to make a bunch of money. The doctor's purpose is to make a bunch of money. The insurance company's purpose is to make a bunch of money. And I'm just like, capitalism shouldn't be involved in this system. But it is, because it's America. And I'm fascinated by people who are like, we don't need universal health care because the system works. And you're like, how often do you go to the doctor? And they're like, I don't know, once every 4 years. And you're like, oh. So people who don't have to use the system think the system is fine. But anyone who has to use the system, you're just like, oh, this is fucked.
Yeah,
but
and then you're trying to explain to other people, and they just kind of look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, they're just like, who
and then
cares?
They repeat. They want to tell you how great their insurance is, and
right.
I don't have any problems.
And you're like, yeah, you go to the doctor maybe for a physical if you have to do it for a health exam or something. But everyone I know who loves the system never goes to the doctor. I'm just like, yeah, that works out great.
Yeah, and I mean, the other, like, I thought going into it, you know, you're seeing all this stuff on social media about everybody's rallying for some sick kid or something like that. And I'm thinking, oh, great, everybody's going to rally for my kid. No, nobody cared. Nobody gave a shit.
No one cared.
You know, you go to these support systems like Epilepsy Foundation, they didn't give a shit.
I would fly
to different, like, conventions, meet all these people, and they just give you, I mean, it was like talking to an agent. It was just talking to a bunch of smoke up your ass.
Straight up the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I found with the support groups, like when I first got diagnosed, it was hard just because I was a comic and I ate like a comic. I ate unhealthy food and I drank and I didn't know how to take care of myself. And so they were like, well, there's these groups you can go to. And I was just kind of mentally, I was in a dark place. So I'm like, I didn't understand what it was going to take. And like now I understand I have an inconvenient disease. It's not the end of the world. It's just annoying. I can't eat dessert. You know, I have to give myself shots, that kind of stuff. But I can, my life is fine. It's not any different than it was before in reality. But I would go to these groups because I'm just trying to grasp what my life is going to be. And it's always type two, which is not me. And so like I'd go and sit in there and it'd be me and like 20 people and they would all just talk about how they need to exercise more and do this and do that. And I'm just sitting there like, and then the lady who was running the group would go, Richard, this doesn't apply to you, but, and then I'm like, what am I doing here? It was 20% of the stuff was useful to me, where it was like, these are foods that you can eat that have a lower glycemic index and stuff like that. I'm like, okay. And then the rest of it's like, so everyone except for Richard, I'd be like, oh, this fucking bullshit. And there was just another thing. So some lady got paid money to teach this class.
Yeah. I for a long time was just trying to get empathy. I was just trying to get somebody to feel for me. And it took me years to realize that's never going to happen.
They just don't care.
Yeah. And especially like on these online support groups, I was getting screamed at by people. Like I was trying to get there's no laws for epilepsy. So people can discriminate, you know, you can put YouTube has fake seizure videos that they won't take down. Pretty much all of them do.
What does that mean?
Like people filming themselves and making money and it's a fake seizure. So it's not helping, you know, basically my kid gets bullied because the other kids think seizures are funny.
Okay.
So it's this giving this perception that epilepsy is no big deal. I mean, epilepsy has been around thousands of years.
Right.
Kills more people than breast cancer. And
wow.
I mean, there's 60 million people worldwide. There's 3 million and there's 60,000 children. And none of these schools, like the school wasn't required, my daughter's school wasn't required to carry her medication. I had to take her out of the school because I would sit there and wait for her to have a seizure in the morning. So it's just debilitating and it's you're just having PTSD all the time because it's happening over and over again. So I would, you know, try to talk to unions and they didn't care. I'd try to talk to politicians, no responses whatsoever. You know, people that are saying, you know, hey, vote for me. They really don't care.
Yeah. If it's not affecting their kid, then they're not going to give a second.
And I tried to focus on getting this law passed and I wrote the law myself and it was just a very simple law, which is, hey, could we train teachers to know what a seizure looks like, because you have your kid there for 8 hours of the day and nobody knows what a seizure is. Nobody knows what epilepsy is. So I would go to school sometimes. My kid would have a seizure. She'd be on the yard. She wouldn't even know who she was or who her teacher was. And the school wasn't required to do anything. So they'd be like, eh, it's no big deal.
Right.
You know, so
there's a lot of things that teachers should be required to know how to do, just like simple medical related things. Like that seems like one that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, same with law enforcement. We're all, you know, I've been pulled over while she's had a seizure in the car and the police think that she's drunk. And I'm like, she's six. Come on, guy.
Right.
You know, I mean, she's 15 now, years ago.
Yeah.
She actually went through about 5 years of different doctors. And she got a VNS implant, which is the vagus nerve simulator. So it actually is an implant and it hooks to your vagus nerve and it's sending impulses to your brain. So she's been seizure free for 5 years because of that. She's got to get the battery changed next week.
Wow. That's great.
But it's great technology. It's been around 20 years. But it's not at all hospitals, you know, it's the hospital's agenda of what they want to give you.
Who's paying who?
Yeah. It's all, on the back end. And everything with hospitals is pharmaceutical oriented. So it's always giving more and more drugs. So that's why I did like the VNS, because it's not a drug.
Right.
You just have to change the battery. And her battery lasted 7 years. So it lasted, I was hoping for 1 month of no seizures. It's been 7 years. So it's
that's
been
awesome.
Absolutely fantastic. It's totally changed her life. She wasn't regressing at one point past the second grade. She made the honor roll this year. I mean, as a parent, it was
that means it's
phenomenal.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to watch your kid be able to just to keep up was huge. And
right.
That's all that I was asking for.
That's so amazing. Well, that's
got that
cool.
With that.
Yeah, that's great news. Nice to have some victories along the way.
Yes.
So then she's 15 now, you said?
Yes.
And so goes to school normal.
So, yep, totally normal. And is able to keep, you know, I was afraid that she couldn't, there were times where she couldn't keep up. She was having, she would pretty much have a seizure and then it would erase her memory. So remember,
right.
It was, that was very hard where she couldn't remember her teacher and couldn't remember basic things. And I just kind of got in a pattern of when she said, I can't remember, I would say, I understand. It's okay.
Right.
You know, my parents would scream at me, but
yeah.
I didn't remember something.
How old was she when she started having seizures?
So she started having them at 2 and she didn't. It was out of the blue. It was before her second birthday, and we rushed her to the hospital, and she flatlined at the hospital, and
wow.
Huge ordeal. You know, you're kind of, that was another thing about, her seizures were at night in her sleep, so we'd have to watch her all night long, and it really affects work and everything, and nobody at work cares.
Yeah.
You know, your boss hates you, no matter, you know, the boss can care less.
Right.
He's
just going to go, well, we'll get someone who doesn't have right. a kid that has that,
right.
so that
exactly.
I don't have to worry about right. it. Yeah.
So, it was just extremely hard for many years for my wife and I. But we would usually be going to the ER, and you know, you're watching ER on TV and everybody's gung-ho and everybody's there just waiting.
Burn
so you
the
leave.
Fuck out.
Yeah. They do not want you there.
Yeah.
And so I could tell early on, like, they hated us coming there because we'd usually come there at like 3 o'clock in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
That's the time you're drinking your coffee. That's your break time. You don't want anybody coming
right.
in there.
No. Yeah, I went to the ER once on Thanksgiving, and the way they basically treated us was like we're the biggest piles of shit that ever lived, and they were mad that they had to be there at all.
Yeah, that's so, I felt that all the time.
I'm just like, hey, Sarah. Wow, okay, and so then what do you do now? You doing the parole thing now?
So I do. Yeah, I'm a parole agent, yeah. So that's something I can't talk about because it's my job, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. All right, fair enough.
That's why I could talk about prison because I haven't been there in a long time.
you
and prison is much more
ago.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Do you still have relationships with people from the prison? Like, not prisoners, obviously, but like you still.
Yeah, and there's still prisoners that I see. I mean, you got to know those guys, so there's no.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
Like, that's the. That's the odd part about it, is that you're getting to know them because you're forced to get to know them. You're feeding them, you know, you're clothing them, you're giving them everything.
Right.
So you do get to know them on a personal level. You're just there. If you were to ever say that to administration, they'd be, what? You're not allowed to do that?
Yeah.
But that's the reality. You're getting to know these guys. So yes, you'll see them on the outside. Sometimes they'll call you because you were basically, you
were the decent one.
But you were the only one that was decent to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they might still go on and commit crimes, but they will call. I have a guy that calls me every couple of years and he was a homeless guy living on the street, and now he picked his life. I mean, a very success story that he finally got off the street in his 60s. But
wow.
It's still like you're still hesitant to
yeah,
talk to that person
you
because
develop.
You know everything about that person.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's the same thing when you had, you know, I have had a couple college friends that passed away because they OD'd. But those were people that were doing drugs in college. I mean, your body can't take it.
Right.
And so those are my friends from college. You're still hesitant also.
Yeah.
Talk to those people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I knew some people that did a lot of, like coke and different things when we were in our 20s. And then now some of them are like in their 50s, and I'm like, you just can't do this for 30 years. Without.
Yeah, I definitely don't think I think when you look at it, especially like the rock star that ODs at 50, you know, they don't like to say that they're ODing, but that's usually what's going on.
Yeah.
Your body just can't take that anymore.
Yeah, your heart's just basically worn down at that point. Yeah, that's fucking terrible.
Like I always look at, I love Hunter S. Thompson as a writer, you know?
Yeah,
and
brilliant.
His son wrote a book about him, and he was just talking about, he's 69 doing all these drugs.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're doing that.
Yeah, he's my favorite writer, but it's one of those things, like his suicide note, when he finally killed himself, you're like, this is what he did.
Yeah, he stayed at home all the time, yeah. And just did drugs. Yeah, that was him.
At the end, he was like, I can't even do drugs anymore. So what's the point of living?
Yeah.
He was in a wheelchair at that point. He couldn't go stuff up.
Like hip surgery. Yeah.
His passions in life were doing drugs, partying, and weapons.
And I think that's, I loved Charles Bukowski, but, you see how they those guys neglected their family, and kind of the media props them up and talks about how wonderful the people, they never knew them, but they talk about how wonderful they were. And I kind of look at it like, they abandoned their family.
Yeah.
They were the greatest people in the world.
Yeah. They're a piece of shit who knows how to write. That's a skill set in there somewhere.
But to me, that's the sad part. It's like, you're sitting there in a home and your family doesn't want to see you because you've burned them so many times.
Yeah, I mean, like Hunter Thompson shot his nurse, or he had like a lady, a caretaker.
Yeah.
And her job was to take care of him and make sure he was all right. One night, He's yelling in his room, and he apparently would just scream and yell sometimes because he's on drugs and partying.
Sure.
And so she came and started knocking on the door, asking if he was okay, and he shot her with a shotgun through the door. And then she's like bleeding, and she's like, it was like just bird shot or something. So it wasn't like he, blasted her with a sawed off, but... he was like, I thought you were a bear.
Right. It's normal. Yeah.
Exactly. He's like, why'd you think I'm a bear? I'm inside the house. And he was like, well, if you are a bear, I don't want you coming into my... Yeah. And she was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Sounds like Hollywood.
Yeah. And her family, nowhere to be seen, because they're like, I'm not going to get fucking shot by this asshole. I'm going to let the caretaker take care of the...
Yeah. And I'm sure his first phone call was to a publicist. Hey, spin this for me.
Yeah. And they're like, you're Hunter Thompson. It's going to be fine. People will think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So then, do you still live in LA area?
I do. I've decided that this is, LA is a shithole, but it's my shithole, and I intend to stay. Everybody else is leaving. No way.
Yeah, me neither.
No, I'm here.
People keep going, where would you consider going? I'm like, nowhere.
Yeah, you know what? I went and looked at other places. Everybody's like, you gotta go to Texas. And I went there, and it's like, it was biblical weather. It's like frogs flying out of the air. And I'm like, no, I can't. I can't.
Too humid.
It's cheap.
Too many assholes.
You can't even walk down the street. It's so humid. Yeah.
But not, the nice parts of Texas aren't even cheap anymore.
No, so it's like, you're right.
It's great. Like the people I know who live there, I'm like, if I bought a place 30 years ago, then it would be a cool place to live. But LA, it's like just below LA and San Francisco pricing and like Austin. You're like, I don't want to live in Wichita Falls or like someplace. Like I
looked at Arizona and I got out of the car and I was like nuclear heat and this isn't happening. No,
yep. Happening. And there it's dry heat.
It's the weather here. 100%. You got the greatest weather I've ever seen.
Yeah. And people are like, you can move to San Diego. I'm like, it's the same shit. It's literally just the same place.
Yeah.
So I've been stuck in horrible traffic in San Diego so many times. Oh, yeah. I'm like, this isn't better. Do you want to ask some questions? Step in?
Sure.
Yeah? All right. We're going to take a break for a second, and then we'll set up Sarah, and she'll ask some more questions, too.
Great.
Cool. We'll be right back. Say hi. All right, guys, we're back. Sarah is here. We're going to ask some more questions of Mike Knox.
Yeah, I mean, I came in late, full disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been as present. I'm fascinated by the California prison system. So how long ago did you get out, so to speak?
I want to say 18 years ago. Was there five years?
Were you ever near people who had to do solitary?
Oh, yeah. I worked in solitary confinement for five.
You did?
For 3 years. Yeah. I liked solitary because normally they're out of their cells all the time. Yeah. In solitary, they're down for 23 hours out of the day. They go out for a few hours out on the yard, but the yard is connected to solitary. So it's, there's less movement.
And
that's what
better.
You want. That's what you want when you have, you've got 1,000 inmates on a yard with 16 officers.
Those are terrible numbers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not very good in math, but they're not.
They don't allow that in schools. They don't allow that number system, like one teacher per however many students. So yeah. Stars for 1,000.
At this point, you're way more likely to get killed in the school than the prison. So.
Oh, it's so
very true.
Yeah.
So the guys in solitary, what do you think about solitary?
The only thing about solitary is that it would make me go crazy because there's no radio, there's no TV. That, like, they're punishing them, and it's like, really? Just give them a TV. Let the guys watch TV, you know?
Yeah.
And so the punishment system to me is just odd because they're not going anywhere. You're in solitary confinement because you committed a crime in the prison. So that's the jail of the prison.
A prison
jail
within
then
prison.
Jail, yeah. Russian doll this thing down.
Do you think that people go in crazy and then they come out more crazy? Or...
Oh, sure, yeah.
But they go in crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
How often are people jerking off?
24 hours a day. I mean,
oh, my God. Yeah. So you've had to see people do it.
Oh, yeah.
And are there rules against that?
Yeah.
Are they not supposed to do that?
There is, but it's like, I'm certainly not going to write the guy up for it. I mean, there are people that will write him up for it. And it's like, then you got to go to court and you got to take time
Explain.
Off to go to court and go and you got to talk about this. And then the DA is going to pick up the case or whatever. And you're really going to strike this guy out for this.
Right.
Which happens, but.
Do you see guys trying to better themselves in prison a lot? Like, I feel like I hear stories on podcasts about like, oh, I learned law so that I can defend myself.
Yeah, it's just very rarely. Most of them are just having fun. I mean, they really are. I know nobody wants to hear this, but they're having fun. I mean, and you, because you, you're fed and you're housed and you don't have to worry about your old lady screaming in your ear and they cycle
you
in and out.
You become friends with people
if you're not
already friends. So.
That's what I mean is you see the same guys that come back and they recognize you and then they also recognize you because they know that you know how to do your job. Because that's the other thing is new people come in and they screw everything up.
Right.
And that's all you want out of the day is just for things to go smoothly because it takes so long. It takes you 4 hours to feed them.
Right.
And that's 3 meals a day. You know, so they're walking to that chow hall. That's a long time to get all those people to walk there. And that's what I liked about solitary confinement is they're fed in their cells. You're feeding them. You're giving them the trays and stuff like that.
Right.
And people looked at that like that was too much work. I just looked at it like they're not coming out. So that's great.
Yeah. What do you feed someone in solitary confinement?
I mean, they're fed.
The normal food?
It's just that the food is mass produced, so it doesn't have a lot of taste. But I'm sure I see on TikTok all the time people making prison food at home. You know, they've just making ingredients and stuff like that. So these guys come up with these spreads. And they're always saying, hey, you want to try this? You know?
I was doing shows in Vegas like a month ago, and it's like the closest to LA that Chris's tour gets. So there's a bunch of random celebrities that came out, whatever. And we're just hanging out backstage. And it was like Flea was there and like random people like that. And Mike Tyson shows up. And we're all just like, oh, Mike Tyson's here. Yeah.
Hey,
so it's Tyson and his wife. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe 2 or 3 weeks after he got in trouble for punching that
guy
on the airplane or whatever.
That guy deserved it.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Everyone agreed he deserved it. And Tyson's just like, there's only so much I can take. And I'm just like, this is the best. So we're all sitting around kind of talking and he walks over and he's like, hey, do you work here? And I know he said it because I'm the only white guy. So he's like, there's no way he's part of the crew. He obviously works for the casino or whatever. And I go, oh, I mean, I kind of do. I'm the opening comic. And he's like, what's the deal with the ramen? Is that for everybody? And I go, yeah, I mean, if you want some of the ramen, you can have it. He's like, I don't usually eat it, but I ate it when I was in jail. And
it's money.
Yeah, he's like, it literally reminds me of like a specific thing. My mouth is watering. I'm like, yeah, man, get down on that ramen. So he gets the ramen out and he's eating it. His wife's like, I can't believe you're eating Chris's ramen. And he's like, that guy said I could have it. And so then he's like, if you really want to make it good. And then he starts giving me the whole recipe. And I'm just like, I go, I'm probably not going to be in prison. He's like, you just never know. Get a packet of hot sauce. You crush up some Cheez-Its or cheese nips. It does not matter. I'm just like, he's like, you mix that in. I'm just like, and there was three or four other ingredients. I'm just like, this is the grossest sounding thing I've ever heard.
Yeah,
top chef prison.
But he was all about, he was all about it. And for some reason, the cheese nips is really a key ingredient.
The flavor.
Because eating is the focal point of your day. That's why.
That's the best part.
I would think.
There really is no, like, sports is very exciting. So there's, you know, everybody's, you know, talking about sports, gambling on sports.
Right.
But that just makes it makes the day go by faster. They call it your program. I got my program down, which is because you're doing your state time.
Right.
So I got that program down. And ramen especially, because there's you see cigarettes in there, but they got rid of smoking. So
right.
Ramen is your money, and that's what you're betting with. Or, you know, like you go into their cells and you see somebody with 50 bottles of shampoo, you're like, that's the shot caller on the yard.
Right.
Because he's got so much stuff. And so that's what they're doing. They're trading goods, which is the thing that I was always interested in.
The bartering of prison.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fascinating because if we've forgotten how to make things from scratch anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like what my grandfather used to do, making stuff out of wood and stuff like that, that's gone. But those guys know how to do that. I mean, you do learn a lot of stuff if you're paying attention. Like I never knew, and I still can't believe this to the fact that the lighter was invented before the match was. So they'll create lighters. You know, they'll get that filament and get batteries and they'll get that little spark. They'll shave some fuzz off their socks and that's a igniter. So there's all sorts of things.
They're innovators.
Yeah.
Engineering. Engineering.
Some of the greatest artists also, I would always say, they're always saying, hey, can I draw a picture for you? And I would always say, yeah, draw a picture of you stabbing me on the tear. I would never do that. But one guy left me a picture of that when he got released of him stabbing me on the tear.
That's beautiful.
So you do get to know them and you get to know them where I would say they are your friends for that amount of time. I mean, there's certain...
Work friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean
I work in restaurants. You have more problems with the people that you work with.
Yeah.
Far more problems with the people that you work with than
the other
inmates.
Prison guards are
because the inmates know, and it's like with police. It's like it's a very one-sided. You know, I just want to get home. I'm about to lose my job and my house, and everything's falling apart. I just want to get home and put a bullet in my head.
Right.
But here's a guy on a motorcycle with a mustache, and he's also about to lose everything, but he's still got this job and this power, and he's going to take it out on you, and you got to sit there and take it.
Right.
That's the same thing with prison. They to an extent have to take it because those are the ones in the uniforms telling them what to do.
Right.
And a lot of times it's not reasonable, you know, things to do. Like one of the things that I always hated was, especially in solitary confinement, it's like, really? It's one roll of toilet paper a week. Can we give them two? You know?
Yeah. There's
Did you
no
ever
reason.
Help anybody out and give them a little extra if they were or nice?
The thing is, you're trying to do your job, which is when you're in when solitary confinement, it like your shower, they get a shower three times a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to shower that whole tier, which is like 60 people. So if those guys, they're supposed to only take 15 minutes of a shower, you're not going to tell somebody if they want to take a shower longer, they're not going to get out of the shower. So
right.
If you can give them extra state stuff or whatever, and they're cool with you, you're cool with them. So they're going to get out of the shower quicker. So it's all just about time management. And it's how, and
right.
So people can't figure that out. But if you can figure that out, your day's going to go a lot quicker.
How do you get the ramen to start with? Like, how do you build your supply?
Because there's a canteen. So there's a canteen and they draw. So
people put money into account for you and you can buy.
You can get packages.
Yeah.
So you can come in wealthy. So
most people don't. But yeah, a lot of people, like I had
you,
one.
You have to have people who care about you to basically put money into the account for you.
And then, you know, a bit amount of money is going pretty far. I remember one guy screaming at me because I need to let him out because he was going to go get pizza. And I was like, what are you talking about? Sure enough, some organization came in and brought pizza. So there's all these outside organizations coming in, bringing them stuff all the time. So, you know, comedy shows are coming in there, stuff like that.
How do they make contact to get that in?
Because they're just calling the front desk of the prison. And the prison's usually...
Who's calling the front desk?
Whoever wants to do like a...
Like a prisoner's mother.
Oh, yeah. That's happening all the time.
Yeah,
people are calling
and putting money in or like saying like, I want to buy this for so-and-so.
Yeah. They're just... They especially, you can do it easy online now, but you can put money on people's books. And
which I remember Pete used to do it for his sister.
Pete
C.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
He'd be like... She got busted or drugs or something, and he'd be like, "Yeah, I got to go put." I told my sister I'd put $100 on her thing, whatever, and I'd be like, "Wow, what can she get with that?" And he's like, "A surprising large amount."
Yeah.
But she would call and ask him sometimes, like, "Hey, I don't have any money on there.
And the calling, like, is that also money? Like, does it cost money to call out?
I don't know if it's changed, but yes, it used to. Mm-hmm. When I was in there, it was MCI. It was at one of the places.
Yeah.
So it was like $10 a minute, something ridiculous.
Oh,
where,
wow. Yeah.
Again, it was how some
like
company can come in and make. Yeah. And
yeah.
So, but they're not paying for it. And
yeah.
So, yeah, they're on the phone all the time. The problem is, and you would hear their conversations too. And the conversations sometimes were fascinating. Like, there was like a couple of Death Row Records guys that were there. You know, they've gotten out since, but they were serving life sentences, and you would hear them talking to their attorneys and you know, their legal issues and stuff like that. Most of the conversations were 24 hours a day trying to get money out of the family. But
right.
You would hear some interesting stuff, and there would be semi-famous people. I mean, like Freeway Ricky Ross was there. Very nice guy and very humble. And I say that only because most of the time you're dealing with people that are throwing shit at you.
Right.
And here's a guy that is doing life. He's gotten out since, but he was a big cocaine dealer in South Central.
Right.
And so those are the celebrities for those guys. They all know.
Yeah.
Those
people
are the celebrities. I was telling Rick that they came in and filmed, and the inmates didn't really seem to care about the
cameras,
the celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a street celebrity, those guys are what's important to mm-hmm. them.
Hell yeah. You're the cocaine supplier for South Central.
And you would never know somebody like him. Very
calm and casual.
Yeah. And because when I started there, so there was no internet really. When I started there, so they'd be like, that's Rick. And I'd be like, I have no idea who that is. Because
yeah.
I couldn't go Google it. So.
What an
sounds
idiot.
Like,
he doesn't even know
who a Rick is. Yeah.
Listen, all the Ricks are big-time cocaine dealers. You said you wrote a book.
So I did. I wrote a book about prison, and I wrote a book about my daughter's epilepsy. Yeah.
Do you want to promote those? Can people
sure.
buy them somewhere?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You can buy them anywhere. There. Straight Fish is the prison book, and Straight Fish is when you're a brand new person. They call you, so they're not being derogatory towards you, but it's
what
a derogatory term. It means you're brand new.
It's like fresh fish.
Straight fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I probably should have called it something else because nobody knows what that means, but you live and learn, you know?
Yeah, I only know what it means because of Shawshank, so,
yeah.
But okay. Yeah.
And then the other one.
You're trying to reel them in or something, I don't know.
Yeah, when they put them on into the yard, they're called fish, and
okay.
You're brand new. And then, of course, when you're a brand new officer, you got your brand new uniform, so everybody knows exactly who you are. You get your fresh haircut. They know exactly who you are, so they're gonna try to manipulate you and get you to do stuff. And yeah, so yes, that stuff. I mean, that stuff does happen, but mostly all your stuff comes in through visiting,
right?
Because there's such a it's a city, so stuff is, you know, yes, there's a front gate, but there's also a back gate that nobody mm-hmm. talks about mm-hmm. that all these other people are coming in. You know, you got doctors and teachers and
right.
you know, just kind of line staff, cooks. So it's going on all the time. So it used to kind of bother me, you know, they'd be like, you know, that person's bringing in dope or whatever, but then you would see it and go, yeah, they're right. That's all the stuff, you know, it's going on all the time.
Did anybody ever try to escape?
Yeah, but for the most part, they don't. And the reason that they don't is I think you could easily, you know, you kind of hear about people that walk out of county jail. Mm-hmm. It is hard to walk out of county jail, and it's hard to walk in there if you didn't know how to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another reason that I say Epstein probably did it, because it's hard for you to get into places, you know?
Right.
Especially if you were a Fed. Feds don't come into prisons.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Unless he was in I don't know if he was in a Fed place or not. But there's usually no cameras anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was he in Riker or something? I don't remember.
No idea.
We discussed earlier,
mm-hmm.
he's the first person in the history of podcasts to say he thinks that Epstein killed himself. Like I said, this is a rarity. I've never heard anyone put this theory out there.
Well, I always thought he did.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that got massages three
That's
times
what we're
a
saying.
Day
like, what
from young girls,
became.
And then you go in there, and all of a sudden, everything
right. and,
you've ever known is
and,
gone.
And nobody is going to, like, I guarantee you, the people working on that, the officers working on that tier who are probably like I was, you're just taking a little siesta there.
Yeah.
You could care less about him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You're not sitting there talking to him. You think he's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
And so you're going to tell him he's a piece of crap. You're not going to cater to him.
Yeah, you're right. Not enamored by
no,
some
not at
prisoner.
All. No.
You're like,
especially
oh,
somebody
guy.
What he did, you would hate that guy. And that's the one thing about prison is everybody hates the stuff
Child
that he
monsters.
Did.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. fuck those people.
Yeah,
they
I definitely
are bottom
think
of the barrel.
He's yep. like, I'm not getting out. Bye.
That Never. Definitely does happen. I mean, prison justice is there. It will always be there.
Yeah.
But again, you've stripped all these guys from everything, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're starting from nothing. That's why I think those are the people if society ends. They're the ones who are going to thrive. It's not me.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be like, I've literally had nothing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's time to flourish in this nothingness. You had a book about your daughter too. What was that
called? Yes, so that's Vivian's Reign. My daughter's name is Vivian.
Vivian's Reign.
Reign, R-E-I?
R-A-I-N. The reason I say that is when she would, before having Caesar, she would say, it's raining in my head.
Oh.
So it was just kind of, that was one of her things was, it was hard for her as a child to explain what was going on.
Right.
Granted, I understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was one of the little catchphrases she would say.
And you can get these both on?
Yeah, you can get them on Amazon.
Amazon, all that?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have anything else you wanted to promote?
I got a website, mikeknox.com.
Okay.
And I got a TikTok, which is Famous Graves. So I film Famous Graves.
Nice.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So that's what I do in my spare time.
Did you go to Père Lachaise in France?
No.
Where Jim Morrison's
buried? Yeah, Jim Morrison.
I thought about...
steal his head.
my friend was like, Jim Morrison's buried there. I'm like, what am I going to do with... what am I going to do with this grave?
I can remember going there in college because my friends wanted to go, and I'm like, sure. And there's all tons of famous people buried in Père Lachaise. And... like, we're standing in line to see Jim Morrison's grave, and this guy in front of me, I'm like, all right, one more person. And then he pulls out two cigarettes, and he lights one and puts one on the grave, and then he smokes the other one. And, like, all the way to, I'm like, he's not
smoking a cigarette with Jim Morrison. It's obviously what was going on.
You're wasting a cigarette.
Yeah.
And smoking one yourself and taking up the time of the people waiting in line. Like, I just want to get a picture and move away.
Yeah.
But... whatever.
You know what you should have done?
What?
Lit them on fire. I have extremes. I apologize. Well, thank you for being on, Mike.
Yeah.
I appreciate
thank you so
it, man.
Much
very
for
fascinating,
me.
Honestly.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
This
is the end of season one.
End of season one. This mm-hmm. was it.
Mike this is our it? Finale.
You're the finale, man.
Season one finale.
I'm honored.
Big twist at the end. We're all going to jail.
Oh, Epstein's still alive. He's coming out.
He would be at the store for sure.
And this would be a great place for him to come back to.
Mike came to the Comedy Store during the dark ages of the early mm-hmm. 2000s. So
he gets it.
Yeah, he gets it. He came here when it
was
going to close every night.
Prison.
Yeah, he came here to feel worse about his life.
I will never, ever, you know, say anything about it bad about anybody that does comedy.
Yeah.
It was one of the hardest things. And that was one of my things about working in a prison. I thought, if I could work in a prison, I could do stand-up.
Yeah.
How long did you do comedy?
I still do it sometimes, but just because of COVID,
I
basically stopped doing it. I'll get back into it when I'm done with my job. But
nice.
It's a lot of time, and people don't realize that. I mean, you're staying here. If you're coming here, you're staying here, and you're hanging out, and you're putting in time. You're putting in work. It's a grind.
It is.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
It is a grind, and I think when you're really good at comedy, it looks easy. You make it look effortless, and so then a lot of people think they can do it.
Well, and that's why you hear about it. It's so rare. Then mm-hmm. they're just like, overnight success.
Yeah. 10 years, overnight success.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you're there, man. I'm proud. Proud of you.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah.
We're
I'm
thankful
trying.
That you're here. we're thankful that we're here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rick is going on tour more.
That's awesome.
Yep.
So we're just taking a little pause. So this is the end of season one, but we'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back. Soon. We'll do more. We'll record more in July.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll start season two.
Yeah.
More strangers. thanks for listening. Season one was good. We met some interesting people, some real psychopaths. I still think that guy who has a website about paying back money of things you stole,
mm-hmm.
he's either, mark my words, he's either going to be a serial killer or he's going to be a cult leader.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought you were going to say, or friends with the serial killer.
he will not be friends with anybody ever because he's such a weirdo, but lots of more strangers out there, so it should be interesting. Right. But thanks for being on, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter. That's INGRAHAM Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye.
Special thanks to the Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.